Welcome back, Kansas City Underground.
What's up, guys?
Hey, quick story. So we're on YouTube. Like, this is...
And Spotify. I mean, I've seen the video on Spotify.
Yeah. So I walked in last night, and my kids were searching some sort of, like, how to draw something on YouTube or whatever. But because this is in my feed now, we popped up, and they were like, "You're on YouTube! Yeah. Oh, my God, you're on YouTube!" That's right, man. And they were like watching all of our videos. Like, they laid down and they were those little reels. And I realized all the reels are just you. There was none of them with me talking.
Well, it's because they take the snippets of the best things that are said in the podcast.
I should not have set myself up for that.
No.
Well, the same thing happened to me. My kids saw my videos, some of the videos I've done on YouTube, but they saw Papa, that's how they call me. You only have like 30 views.
Yeah.
my morale went down.
Yeah, that's the opposite effect.
Sorry,
mine did it to me too. They were like, "There's only like 9 views on that." And then he goes, but it's just yesterday that went up. So, but then they were like, "But that's a lot more than they named a friend of theirs. Like, he only had like 8 or something." And then one of the 10-year-olds goes, "I'm gonna tell my friend." And then when like she's on YouTube, she'll see you. I was like, dude, okay, guys.
I think that is a great introduction to say, if you need to, you know, check us out on YouTube, we exist there as well. And it's also a great introduction to Guy, because he starts telling a story about his kids and people are going to be like, "Who is this beautiful man that I now see?"
I started to put next to his name, Brazilian Corey, because the first time that he told us about you, he's like, Guys, like, "I found me, but he's Brazilian."
"I found me, but he's way better looking."
Yeah,
that's what he meant.
That's what I said. That's
and
exactly
he has a
what
nice
I said.
Accent.
That's exactly what I said. That was many a year ago, Guillerme. Guy, what's up?
How you doing?
Good. We're trying to figure out, and Brian just left, and now that it's that we do have screens, people can just see that he just walked out of the room.
Now he's done with us,
and he's gone. Which I might do later.
All right.
Because I've got a lunch that I might go to, so it might just be a in and out. Just Guy's there, consistency.
That's all you guys. All everybody needs, anyways.
And we're trying to, Guy and I were trying to think, like, is he a regular contributor?
I think so. It's just been a minute.
Like, he's been at least one podcast, but I feel like it's probably been at least another.
I need the title. So just for my own, no,
for your identity.
I want to say that I am a regular.
Maybe so we should do a podcast about identity.
What if we did a podcast of all the regular contributors at the same time?
I don't think we have that many microphones.
That would be unbelievable. So anyway,
all right, this is a short podcast, so let's go.
Yeah, so we are now like 5 minutes into 3 minutes into the very short podcast. So we're with Guy. We're kind of finishing up our series within a series. The larger series being urban. Disciple making movements, characteristics of that. So our friends from 248, you go to 248.com.org.
Yeah, spelled out.
Spell out 248.
You know, if one of them doesn't work, try the other.
Try the other one. And we've been in this for a long time. So if you've been listening with us, you know that we've been going on with that series. And we've been for the last couple of weeks talking about what it means to reach the few who can reach the many, or investing in people who can invest in others. And that
find the few that can reach the many is the actual title.
Is the actual title of this observation. Find the few who can reach the many. So yeah, we talked to, I think Haley last week was Zero Hour, kind of giving a little story of what's that been looking like with some high school students and some teams there. And just like, it'd be fun. We were like, "Hey, I haven't talked to Guy for a while." And just hear some of the ways when you hear us talk, Guy, about what it looks like to find the few to reach the many. There's probably lots of examples in your head through your years and your very old also. So your years of ministry. And I think this came up last time. Guy is 2 days older than me because it was a leap year.
Right.
So I was born March 1st and he's February 28th. So usually our birthdays are just one day apart, but the year we were born was a leap year and you were almost a leap year baby. I was almost a leap year baby. Boom. But sure.
You guys could almost be like 8 right now.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
We are in most areas of our life.
Anyways, that is very accurate. Yeah, so Guy, I think because of your years and years of ministry, and context that have spanned a lot of different, you know, different places, different ways, I think you probably have some stories with that. But first thing that comes to your mind when we talk about reaching finding the few to reach the many is what?
Man, the first story I would say was how I came to the Lord. At 18, a friend of mine in high school that played soccer with me was different than all my other friends, all my family upbringing. all my reality. And he started sharing. What's happening? See, we're all eight.
Sorry. Anyone who's just listening.
I started sharing about, you know, the Lord and stuff like that. And I just invited me to just to conversations using soccer as that tool.
Yeah.
And
which I think you can hear more about in the first interview with Guy. I think you dove into that story.
Yeah. And then after that, I just had this life change, life transformation. And in my environment, it was just very, very secular. Mm-hmm. And trying to find guys that, you know, would just find the few that would actually even want to listen to what I had to say.
So that's kind of baked into your...
I was going to say, I think the story is I was the few attempting to reach the many.
Yeah, I mean, right. You were that person. Yeah, yeah, that's your story.
Also, what gets me the most is that when I was the few, this friend of mine passed away.
Mm.
So I was alone.
That's right.
Yeah. I was really alone. And that created more of a desire to belong or also have someone to walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started talking to my friends about. And then one guy, a few years later, became a believer. And then we actually started this dream of ours to just two or more.
Yeah.
So there was just two of us.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Matthew 18:20, the ministry of reconciliation. It was just like, it's only the two of us.
Oh, wait. So when you came up with the name two or more, it was
literally
truly because there was two and we...
Because we read the passage.
It could be more.
Okay. So you did actually read the passage. Yes. That's great, 'cause I was like, that would have been incredibly ironic.
This is church. No.
Yeah.
Then other people, older people, theologians said, no, actually, it's not church. It's a ministry of... No, man. It killed our dream. It's like just... But... And then it goes back to this. All I want to do now is to find...
Mm-hmm.
The people that are maybe hurting, but not only hurting, but has the passion to reach out to others and different contexts. So the way I grew up, it was very affluent, very, you know, just rich, very rich. And right here, back in the States, I don't deal with all the people around me are either in urban areas, at-risk neighborhoods, or like African refugees that came not too long ago and they're struggling financially. Some of the Latinos are struggling financially.
Yeah.
And young adults, especially, they're trying to figure out life. And I just want to find the few that can go and reach their own people group, whether it's a language barrier, language issue, or just demographics, you know, just different areas.
Well, I think that's what I want to zoom in on what you're doing now, and like maybe in the last year or so and then upcoming. But yeah, for those of you who don't know / remember. So yeah, Guy, Brazilian, soccer player.
And Lebanese.
Dad is Lebanese, right? Yeah. And so like you, but you know, there's a pretty large Lebanese, people in Brazil, right?
Yeah, the largest.
Yeah. So that's interesting also. And yeah, you said you came from money. But so much of your early ministry was in the context of like the slums.
Right.
You know, so you've been in a lot of places and then soccer as a tool. You played soccer in the States, you know, you get married. Soccer is a big part of your ministry. You're a soccer coach for years and years and years. And up until recently at a local school here. And so as you're moving into this next stage of life, you can tell us a little bit about like both with Ethnos. So both with Ethnos and something about nations and ethnicities, that, and then also, just like, you go with like so much of your work, even amongst like studying refugees and your doctoral work, things like that. So like, what's life been look like the past year and then moving forward?
It was, it was just a figuring out, the access ministries, the passions and desires, and soccer has been a tool for me. I came to the Lord through soccer, and I've used a lot soccer opportunities to travel the world and do evangelism stuff and do discipleship and all that, and came back to the States because of soccer. I got to Kansas City because of soccer. I wasn't choosing, did not choose Kansas City. So that might sound terrible, but
it sounds terrible.
Okay. I'm from São Paulo, Brazil, and just 20 million people there and close to the beach. I'm like farther away from the beach as possible.
I get that.
Using soccer, that's the DNA that I have still is to use the sports as ministry.
Yeah.
Now, not so much on the front stage as a head coach, but more of a, how can I equip new leaders that want to use soccer? So because of those years of experience in soccer and then coming here, got very close, connected to the soccer world. And most of that world is Latinos, Africans, Asians, the rest of the world that loves soccer most. Loves to kick the ball, not throw the ball.
I'm so confused. Yeah. Actually, we're getting there in Kansas City, though, huh? Like, yes, it's like kind of a hotbed of youth soccer, and there's so much soccer everywhere that it's kind of disgusting.
Which I love it. There's soccer all over the place.
I'm like, you have hands.
Well, I kick it.
I don't get it.
But then just now it's more of a, all right, let me pray. Like, let me just fast and pray for the few guys that want to use the sport as a way to access others.
Yeah,
so I already have.
Yeah,
your ministry are kind of moving into ethnos is like, it's actually designed to reach a few, equip them in coaching skills, equip them with licenses so they can coach their own teams.
Right.
And I don't know this yet, so I'm kind of asking a question here. Just because we were discussing right before we came on, like, what's the goal? You're trying to be a ministry? You're trying to be a competitive thing? Right. Like, you're using this as a way to, like, go, I'm going to equip you, and, like, the principles of who Jesus is is embedded into all of this. It's not like, well, we'll play for a hot minute, and then, but we're going to do that Bible study.
Yeah, no,
you know, it's like, it's all of life baked into it.
Yeah, my desire is to see, as you know, people don't hear this, I've been hearing this, it's probably the same old, but my desire is to see disciple makers using the tool of soccer. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have the best of my knowledge is to how to use soccer. I want to see guys treating their teams as their community, that's their churches. That's the way that they will see the generations moving forward, because I want them to be disciple makers, planting seeds and disciple others, so they will see disciple makers coming from the youth team, from the parents, from, you know, see DBS forming, see micro churches forming. I mean, and
how many teams can you coach at one time? Like, at any point in your history, how many have you coached at one time?
Oh man, you can coach. Depends on how serious the level, the organization that you are. You can coach.
I mean,
kids,
you
club teams.
Like, how many of you coached at one time?
Probably three.
Three.
Yeah. The college. And a couple of club teams.
Yeah. So, like, you got a limit.
Right.
I'm going somewhere that.
Like,
you know,
three, like, is actually pretty, is a lot. Even that, you can't touch the city.
Let me tell you a little story. My 6-year-old is pretty good. He played his first, like, indoor, and he ran circles around these kids. Granted, he's thick. Like, and he was playing some little tiny guys. I was fascinated. I fell in love with it again.
Yeah.
Like, watching him play. Nobody wanted to be a coach.
Right.
So I was like, well, you know, I got some skills. Mm-hmm. I don't have skills in soccer, though. But I coached.
He's got other skills.
I'm just making a point.
He's got a beautiful voice.
I'm making a point. I could not have coached more because I didn't even coach these kids. It's like,
yeah.
Go run.
Yeah.
I'm making a point just as I was just levity. You got a limit if it's just you trying to run a ministry and trying to invest in these parents and invest in these kids. And, like, the strategy for you is, like, taking your whole life to go everywhere you've been. Your foundation is literally somebody was reaching you and you could reach all these people.
Right.
Now it's, like, baked into the next level of if each of these guys, maybe girls, are coaching 2 or 3 teams at a time, like, multiplication, like, you can actually see it happening.
Yes, it's exponential. That's what I love the most. It took me some years to get out of pride and get out of you know, ego and all that kind of stuff. In a sense of saying, you know what, I need to step down and train others so they can step up and take over.
Yeah.
They have to be the next disciple makers of the generation. Let me just help equip and train them how to use it and not to be abusive in a sense of the game.
Totally.
It's about people. Use the game.
I think your story is actually such a great picture of what we're trying to talk about with the few to reach the many, even what you have done vocationally and what you're moving into. So, like, when we first started hanging out, a lot of our conversation was around if we had a club team in Kansas City, mm-hmm. And that could be kind of the setting for a lot of our disciple making and get, and we poured a lot of, like, we were trying to do a lot of different things, right, and we were doing a lot of stuff with the college. And that never really came into fruition, but what happened in it is that we connected with KCK United.
Right.
And I'm trying to think if we haven't had Josh or anything, but like that's a local club that had a very similar vision. And so then now we got to train a lot of our early people that we were going, and all of your guys that you've trained as coaches are now helping with that club. So we've got multiple different age groups within this club, and we've got some DBSs going with, they've got some cool stuff happening.
Right.
But even that you realize, or we realize, but you, I think, just listening to the Lord saying, I don't want to create a club. Like, that's already some of those that exist.
Right.
What if we created disciple makers who are high quality coaches that could go into every club?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they could start new clubs, but they could also just go into clubs that already exist.
Right.
So you just started thinking exponentially. You started thinking the very topic of like, okay, I'll have a system where I can keep cranking out the few,
right,
who can reach the many. And I love it because it's very practical. Like you're going to create coaches that, you know, get their licensing,
right?
Like help them get through all of that. It's not my world,
but yeah, you just help be them quality excellent that. Coaches,
yeah, while at, the same,
at
time,
the same time
you're walking them through the missionary pathway, how, yeah, to make disciples from the ground up. So right. I mean you've talked a little bit, but is there any more to that you would even like, what is Ethnos like as you unpack that? What does, right, that ministry look like?
Yeah, another facet of that is to how, especially with young adults and the demographics that I've been studying and living in,
yeah,
how can I also take care of them internally, emotionally,
mm-hmm,
you know, psychologically, the soul care part of it.
Yeah.
So because they will grow, they will mature, and they also will pass the whatever energy, meaning like, is this guy passionate? Is this guy getting angry? Does this guy have traumas? And these guys will be dealing with kids. So I potentially have 20 to 25 year old guys that need to have a mentor, mm-hmm, need to have a structure and a spiritual, like a missionary pathway, a structure on that, mm-hmm, but also get the excellent practical training for soccer. Mm-hmm. So it's a soccer. It's how to be a missionary, but also how you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
How are you learning to see some blind spots? How to some inner healing-ish stuff? Because with specifically with that particular demographic, there's a lot in it.
Mm-hmm.
So through some of the studies, like you mentioned before, my doctorate thesis was about, yeah, the traumas that refugees have when they come to the country, and mm-hmm, how does that affect spiritual growth?
Mm.
So kind of, you know, I'm in love with that, to trying to bring all three. And then see an effective disciple maker.
First off, I apologize for not putting Dr. Gee under his name.
Oh, no, weird.
That was a real mess. But wow. Secondly, I missed the recording last week, with being in the room and hearing all that you guys got around. But one of the things I'm hearing that I don't know if we've talked about in Find the Few to Reach the Many is the soul care component, and just kind of contemplating if you're trying to reach a whole bunch of people, that's probably the one thing that you'll exclude.
Yeah.
Because how deeply can you really go? If your mindset is like, man, we're just trying to reach everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is usually about conversion, not disciple making. Like, you're going to have to target. Mm-hmm. And that kind of mindset, it probably is target. It's like, all right, well, I got to give them like two or three things so they can go do it again.
Right.
And those two or three things are usually going to be some confidence skills about sharing a DBS or doing the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that you don't find Jesus in a DBS. It's not that you don't engage your heart with his when you're discovering him in scripture. Ultimately, that's going to happen. But there is a reality of like being specific about what are you facing?
Right.
What hurts right now?
Right.
What are you sad about?
Right.
What are you afraid of? All of those components that you can begin dealing with when it's like, no, I got this six.
Right.
And I don't have to just train them on DBS and send them, or train them just on soccer. It's like, because I'm laser focused on a few, I can hit all of these components for holistic disciple making.
Like part of the reasons I love coaching is that, for example, in England, you don't use the name coach. The coach is a manager.
Yeah.
The name is a manager,
yeah,
which I love because you understand that you're a manager of people.
Mm.
as a soccer coach, as a head coach especially, you have to understand that you are managing, let's say, 20 guys on your roster, 25 different lives, mm-hmm. 25 different backgrounds, mm-hmm. 25 different goals and purposes in life. So as a coach, you have to understand that the guy's not producing on the field. Why? Mm-hmm. Pull him aside, talk to him. He might have an issue at home. He might have an issue somewhere else.
Right.
You have to figure that out before you can ask him to produce
yeah.
on the soccer field. In the professional world, which I was for a year in Brazil, I didn't like that because you don't have time for that. You have to produce. I don't care what's happening mm-hmm. in your home. Mm-hmm. You have to produce results right here. But in the college world, and especially in the youth,
mm-hmm.
it's way more, hey, how's it going, mm-hmm. than produce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I love about using sports and being that position of leadership. Because when you have kids, they're 10, even yesterday, I was with 11-year-olds and I was doing some skills. And in one second, I have an attention of all of them.
Mm.
They're like, oh, wow, yeah, you know, it's just the tools that we
have. My kids are around me all the time.
Yeah. So that's the opportunity that we have. So when I see a 20-year-old guy that says, hey, coach, I want to use soccer to not only be around those kids and help them out, but also to see them being Christ-like, mm-hmm. and that you have an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, totally. And having those guys where you are going deep with, and they have immediate output to reproduce it. I think that's there is that general assumption, I think, within at least the way that we talk about it, like you pour into people and it's got to be reproducible and they got to go do it immediately.
Right.
And it can be incredibly shallow. Well, that's if you just do that and say bye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you're patiently walking with them for a long season, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, I think that's where Haley talked about that some last week. You weren't there, but like Haley talked a lot about what they're doing in their 0-hour clubs and forming disciples of students in the midst of that. Same thing, I think, what you're doing. Is that we are seeing the need for depth and breadth in our strategy to reach them. They have to have an immediate output of some kind. Like it can't just be information,
right?
And it
right.
can't just be like, let's go deep, you know, conceptually for a really long time, because that just doesn't work. It creates a lot of disciples that we have currently in the American church, which is lacking and sometimes actually joining God in what he's doing. So like, how do we actually do this? Where we're depth of emotionally, we're walking with people, and then they go, but they're actually doing it.
Right.
Then they have an output for it. And that's what we even read in the 248 document, is like, it's just so needed in an urban context because relationships are shallow. People are lonely. Right. They need that. So we can't just be like, all right, go, okay, go, boom, yeah. go do your thing. I'll be back. I'm gone. Like it just won't work. We won't create disciple makers without that depth. Depth takes time. So we're talking about how do we reach a whole city? We don't have, it doesn't logically make sense that we spend lots of time, but we have to.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, and that's happening in lots of places, it right. becomes exponential.
So if I coach 10 guys in the next cohort, whatever, and then these guys understand the desire for, and then they have their own friend that says something, and then I don't need to be that one.
Yeah.
In the past, I wanted to be, no, bring him here. Bring mm-hmm. him here. Yes. Come on, let's grow this. Now I have 100 coaches. No. I have 10 and you have 10 and you have 10. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
That's yeah. why we grow exponentially.
Yeah.
So, I'll wrap it up with this then. Paul gave it to Timothy. Timothy gave it to other faithful witnesses who gave it to others.
That's cool.
And I would joke about it all the time, but like Paul knew Timothy's name. He didn't say the names of the others, but he apparently knew them well enough to say other faithful witnesses. And then that fourth generation out, baby, I don't even know those people. They're just others.
Praise God. That's right.
So, yeah, hopefully these last couple of weeks have been helpful. And I just encourage you to try to think through the framework of what is Jesus calling you to do. You hear a very specific story in a context. What's your specific story, specific context that you can think about the 3 to 10, 3 to 12 that you're going, these are my people, and they're going to reach their 3 to 10 to 12. And, you know, contemplate what's Jesus saying in this that I can begin to do where I am.
Do we want to hear a story though before we go?
I thought you had to leave.
I do, but I can walk
it's
out.
It's gonna be weird.
But now we're prepping everyone.
Well, now you've told us.
I do
a story.
Think like he's got some stuff on the ground that'd be good.
Well, hey, so that was what a great, an ending! What a solid ending!
He did so had a great. Look, all right, guys. Awesome.
I'm not even looking. I'm looking at me right now.
I am good embarrassed because it was so good. But I also want to get you told the story just then. Like any other, like you have one or two things that you're saying, like God doing right now on the ground. Tell Brian. Because I'm leaving because I've got a lunch.
You see what happens when you leave.
Okay.
Click leave.
I'm trying to actually put my...
it won't let you?
The restaurant one?
And if any other stories, yeah, pop up. That was good. That just happened like last week, right?
Or yeah, a couple weeks ago. A month ago, yeah.
Okay.
Just...
bye, guys.
I'll see you. It was just... man, what's... Sometimes I am, because you know Latino countries, and we have Brazil. Brazil is like the... apex of Latino stereotypes. We're loud.
I thought you were saying it's the apex of all Latino people.
No, we're not the best. We're the loudest, I think. That's why I would say it. So I was eating lunch with a friend of mine. I'm waiting for the food, and we're talking about Jesus, talking about accountability, talking about some of the issues with young adults and just this lukewarmness or the desire to, where are those guys on fire for the Lord that are young adults? And this issue with also accountability. Where are the people that want to be accountable and want to be around people like that? So, you know, I just talk with this friend, and then the food came and they prayed. And then 5 minutes later, this guy show up at our table and say, hey, I'm sorry I couldn't help hearing you guys talk.
Because you're loud.
Because you're loud. But this is where I said, this is where I am. I need accountability, but I don't know how to. You know, I'm struggling with my walk with the Lord because of lack of community, lack of people around me. Mm. I've tried going to churches, but it fell off, felt weird. And then he asked me, do you guys do any Bible studies in the area? This is in Armourdale. Do you guys do studies in the area or whatever? I said, well, first thing I said was like, how can we pray for you? Mm. I felt that. I felt this, you know, he's like, yeah, we do stuff like that. We do. We do meet every Thursday for lunch and pray. We have a little structure there. So you're welcome to come. And then just what's something that we could right now pray for you? And then long story short, we've the past 3 weeks, we've been meeting almost every day to pray and go through the Bible and DBS. And the awesome thing is that the second day he came, I showed him a process of the DBS, how he could, because he's kind of like a baby in the faith.
Yeah.
But the first night, I didn't say anything to him. The next day, he came back and said, hey, I did this with my wife and daughter, and it was awesome. And the next day, he brought a friend to our prayer time. It's like, you got it.
Yeah.
You got it. That's it. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Let's go.
That's crazy.
That's just awesome, man. Just so my encouragement to all of you is to, when you are in the places, be loud.
Yeah, yeah. Be a loud Brazilian. What about the... I mean, since we're in story time and Corey left and gave us free reign to do whatever, what about, just with the guys that you're coaching right now that you're imagining, like what's kind of an encouraging sort of.
Right now I have two guys that said yes to this dream that I have to disciple them and invest in their lives. I have 10 guys, but two guys are ready.
Boss, on that right there, like you got two guys that you said yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is implying a question was asked. Like, was it like
I invited them?
Was it like
an invitation?
Was it like, hey, come follow me? I'll make you fishers of men.
Come and see. No, I pretty much was like, hey, you've seen what I like to do and how I do things, and they expressed the desire to use soccer as a ministry. So after they expressed this for a while, I said, hey, man, I think I have something for you. I want to invest in your life. I want to help you, equip you in the soccer world. So I want to invest in you with your certifications, with your licenses for soccer, but also be part of this spend some more time closer so that we can walk through a missionary pathway, for example, and see how you can effectively use your skills and make disciples. And part of that is creating even a stronger bond between us,
mm-hmm.
where we are sharing more things, we're growing more. So these guys already signed up for the license,
mm-hmm.
and we're starting. So that's awesome. I'm excited.
Let me ask a question about pace and time. Not to betray too much, but like I've watched you move fast in the past. Like you got a lot of stuff going.
It's a pattern.
Yeah, yeah. You said it, not me. But like there's a lot going and like I want to see this happen and this happen. You're built that. That's not a bad thing. It's a gift. But I also hear a very distinct, it's been a minute since we've hung out. Like there's a shift.
Right.
And you're telling me now stuff that 2 years ago I don't think I'd have heard from you of like, yeah, like I'm gonna invest in these guys, I'm gonna teach them this, right. I invited them in. Right. You know, you don't just get licensed. Like there's a process to get licensed and then there's a process to get the next one degree up.
Right, right.
You've invited them into a whole life thing.
Right.
What's been the shift to go, I'm going to slow down?
I think slaps in the face. That's life. Life teaches you that way sometimes. And for me, it was that. It was a few years ago, a season of like, what am I doing? This is burning me out. Mm-hmm. For those of you to know, I have a wife and 4 kids. And so that there's an odd world that I have to, you know, be a leader and be a positive example where there was so much going on. This is the trend for me was just to embrace everything. I want to do things. Apostolic desire to see things happening. And as part of that identity too, it's like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. What do I have to show? So I was coaching, and I think as a pivotal time, God, this last few months or so, I already had this desire for this ministry to happen, but it wasn't going to happen because I already have too much. But God just nudged and said, "Hey, I need you to step down from your head coach position so you can actually focus on a few." Mm-hmm. Because I was focusing on the too many. Mm-hmm. I want to do this with so many people. You know, and just realizing the three and the 12 for me took time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, man. I just want everybody to hear that.
Yeah. And I encourage people to pray for that 3 and 12 and be happy with that.
Let's end with that. I want just say a little bit more on that. You get the final word. Cause I think this is sort of like the key moment for this little piece here of find the few to reach the many is like, there's a personal identity decision to do this.
Right.
So like if you're looking at people and going like, hey, here's the prayer I'm praying. Here's what I hope you're praying.
Right.
Like, what are you saying to people?
Yeah. The I'll come with the problem first, the problem of what the world tells you, who you are, the lies that we hear, you are what you do, performance and all that kind of stuff, possessions, popularity. How can we find our joy in the Lord when it doesn't look glamorous? Mm. When reaching 3 to 12, just using the numbers, you don't get the attention of the world. You don't get the popularity of the world. You don't have the many followers, but you are planting everlasting seeds of the Lord, of the gospel. That's the movement will happen. And like you said, and I love that Paul may not have known his grandkids in the faith, right? Great grandkids in the faith, because it didn't matter. Mm. What mattered is that he faithfully poured his life into Timothy, who faithfully did and kept going.
Yeah.
And we are a product of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my prayer is that we come to the realization of what I have is in the Lord. It's not what the world gives me. It's what I have and I'm content. Content.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm content to see the few and pray fast that they will reach many.
Mm, amen. Woo!